And now, Veep Thoughts by Kamala Harris.
I'm going to share with you a very simple story, which is that I went home one day and I said, well, why are conservatives bad, Mommy? Because I thought we were supposed to conserve things. I couldn't reconcile it. Now I can.
This has been Veep Thoughts by Kamala Harris.
Stu Does America.
I got no sleep last night, so I have no idea how this is going to go. Welcome to the program, youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica. By the way, the reason why I was up late, because we were live with you. If you're on youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica, if you follow the page, you click the bell for notifications, they'll notify you when we go live. We went live after the debate with your questions and answers on what just happened, what it means. We love doing it, so join us there at youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica. Follow the page. Glenn Beck is going to be here in a couple minutes to make the moral case for mass deportations. He got no sleep either, so I have no idea how that's going to go. Fighting continues to heat up in the Middle East. We'll go over the latest there. We're going to start by doing the VP debate. Kamala Harris, Tim Walz, how did it go? Who won? What went on? Let me give you, if you didn't watch any of it, didn't follow any of the coverage, let me give you one way to explain it. Here's CNN's reaction after the debate.
I think there was a clear lack of preparation and execution here on Walz's part.
I think actually it's the opposite. I think he had too much preparation.
Maybe. Yeah.
He had so many lines that he was clearly trying to say that he didn't listen and said when J.D. Vance said one of the many, many things he really hit Kamala Harris on, not Tim Walz, but Kamala Harris, he didn't respond because he clearly had things in his mind. I think the lack of interviews that he has done with national media, with local media, it showed he needed more rest.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, J.D. Vance is much more experienced at this, at public speaking, at defending himself, at pivoting.
I got news for you. If Tim Walz won that debate, that would not be the reaction from CNN. Also, just to quibble a bit with Jake Tapper, Tim Walz was a congressman for 12 years, right? Like he's been a governor of a state. J.D. Vance has been a senator for 2 years. So, I mean, when it comes to experience, I mean, I don't know. I mean, obviously, Vance is pretty experienced with the media generally, but this would be something that Walz should be able to handle. Now, it started off really rough for Walz. He looked very, very nervous at the beginning of this. I was starting to wonder if it was going to really spiral out of control. And there were some moments where it looked that way. Maybe the worst moment for Walz was his question on Hong Kong. In debate, Walz struggles to answer question on his time in Hong Kong. If you haven't seen this, I want to give you this in its entirety because a clip of it doesn't do it justice. You need to feel the entire awkwardness of this horrible answer. And I might say, we covered this on the show yesterday. He lied about going to Tiananmen Square, being in China and Hong Kong when Tiananmen Square happened. We know that's not true. He's been repeating it for years. We know it's a lie. So you have to be prepared for this question to be asked. You should have an absolutely easy to go to, memorized answer as what you're going to say when this question comes up. Listen to how bad he struggles through this.
Governor Walz, you said you were in Hong Kong during the deadly Tiananmen Square protests in the spring of 1989.
Let's write it down.
But Minnesota Public Radio and other media outlets are reporting that you actually didn't travel to Asia until August of that year.
Uh-oh.
Can you explain that discrepancy?
Yeah, well, and to the folks out there who didn't get at the top of this, look, I grew up in small rural Nebraska.
Here we go.
Town of 400, town that you rode your bike with your buddies till the streetlights come on, and I'm proud of that service.
Your service of riding the bike until the lights came on?
Family farms. And then I used the GI Bill to become a teacher, passionate about it, a young teacher. First year out, I got the opportunity in the summer of 89 to travel to China. 35 years ago, be able to do that. I came back home and then started a program to take young people there. We would take basketball teams, we would take baseball teams, we would take dancers, and we would go back and forth
to China.
The issue for that was to try and learn. Now look, my community knows who I am. They saw where I was at. They Look, I will be the first to tell you, I have poured my heart into my community.
I've tried to do the best I can, but I've not been perfect.
And I'm a knucklehead at times, but it's always been about that. Those same people elected me to Congress for 12 years.
What does any of this mean?
In Congress,
it has nothing to do with the question.
I was one of the most bipartisan people working on things like farm bills that we got done, working on veterans benefits. And then the people of Minnesota were able to elect me to governor twice. So look, my commitment has been from the beginning to make sure that I'm there for the people.
Why did you lie?
To make sure that I get this right. I will say more than anything, many times I will talk a lot, I will get caught up in the rhetoric, but being there, the impact it made, the difference it made in my life, I learned a lot about China. I hear the critiques of this.
I would make the case that Donald Trump should have come
on one of those trips with us. I guarantee you he wouldn't be praising Xi Jinping about COVID, and I guarantee you he wouldn't start a trade war that he ends up losing. So this is about trying to understand the world. It's about trying to do the best you can for your community. And then it's putting yourself out there.
Still rambling, by the way, on the same.
What it is. My commitment, whether it be through teaching, which I was good at, or whether it was being a good soldier or was being a good member of Congress, those are the things that I think are the values that people care about.
What?
Governor, just to follow up on that, the question was, can you explain the discrepancy?
All I said on this was, is I got there that summer and misspoke on this. So I will just, that's what I've said.
Okay.
So I was in.
No, don't start again.
Hong Kong and China during the democracy protests went in. And from that, I learned a lot of what needed to be in governance.
You were looking at communist China and you learned a lot about what needed to be done in governance? That, my friends, was a plane into a mountain. That was a train crash, a plane crash, and a car crash all at the same time. Not good. Not good. I mean, imagine what Kamala Harris is thinking watching this debate and seeing this happen. I mean, she's just got to, I mean, she's not good at this either, but she's just got to be depressed. Terrible, terrible answer. And of course, a lie. And frankly, like on the Tim Walz scale of lies, this is not all that egregious. I mean, he was in China shortly after Tiananmen Square. I mean, a few months after Tiananmen Square. Now, it's not accurate. He was lying. He wanted to make it more dramatic. He lies all the time about his life. Almost nothing he has said about his life is actually true. It is incredible how much he lies about his own life. But, I mean, you could pretty easily say, look, I was in the area at a time when the crackdown after Tiananmen Square was happening, and occasionally I've misstated that. But the point was, I watched all that go on, and I learned a lot of lessons. Like, it's not a hard thing. I mean, I think it's pretty low on the Walz lying scale. He's much, much worse on other things. I don't know why that one tripped him up so much. I think it's just that he's just not that good about this. And he doesn't seem to know a lot of things about, you know, the country and how it operates, particularly free speech. There's been this clip that's gone around, again, just political malpractice here, not being prepared for the Hong Kong question. And then you have this situation where he was on TV in 2022 and basically said the First Amendment has an exception for hate speech. This is absolutely false by everyone's knowledge. Every court ruling, everyone who's ever thought about the First Amendment and looked into this, and not going on vibes, like no one likes hate speech, so you don't want it to happen, but everyone knows that, of course, there is no carve-out for hate speech. That's insane. Everybody who's looked at this knows this. He says it in 2022. It goes viral multiple times. No one corrects him on it. He still apparently believes this is true, and that is, at every level, completely egregious political malpractice. And here he goes, trying to defend it in a way that, again, he should absolutely know is wrong. Watch.
Obviously, Donald Trump and I think that there were problems in 2020. We've talked about it. I'm happy to talk about it further. But you guys attack us for not believing in democracy. The most sacred right under the United States democracy is the First Amendment. You yourself have said there's no First Amendment right to misinformation. Kamala Harris wants to use the power of government and big tech to silence people from speaking their minds. That is a threat to democracy that will long outlive this present political moment. I would like Democrats and Republicans to both reject censorship. Let's persuade one another. Let's argue about ideas, and then let's come together afterwards.
You can't yell fire in a crowded theater.
That's the test. That's the Supreme Court test.
No, it's not.
Fire in a crowded theater. You guys wanted to kick people off of Facebook for saying that toddlers shouldn't wear masks.
Senator, the governor does have the floor.
Fire in a crowded theater. That is criticizing the policies of the government, which is the right of every American.
Okay. He continues to go down the road where he says, oh, actually, a hate speech. He thinks, you could see the passion in his eyes. He thinks he's caught him on this. There's a hate speech exemption from the First Amendment. Don't you know that? How does he not know this? He wants to be vice president of the United States and he's not aware of this? That's number one. And then his big complaint is, or his big argument is, well, you can't say fire in a crowded theater. Listen, boys and girls, I'm going to lay this out yet again. We've probably done this 10 times on the show. Yes, you can. Yes, you can say fire in a crowded theater. He is loosely correct that in 1919, by the way, this is you can see read all this. I tweeted it yesterday. How to yell fire in a crowded theater. I refer back to this ad or this reason piece often because it lays it out really well. But the fire in a crowded theater quote is basically a paraphrase from a Supreme Court case in 1919. And in that case, this is a case, by the way, that everyone on the left would complain about if it was actually in effect, which it is not. But if it were into effect, they would complain about it often. It was a case about a socialist who was distributing anti-war literature, leaflets. And they distributed it and got convicted because they said, well, you're not allowed to do that. That's against the country's interests. And it went to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court said, you know those pamphlets you distributed against the war? That's basically the same thing as saying fire in a crowded theater, and you can't say that. It's an example of what the government would do with that type of standard. If that standard existed, they'd say everything was fire in a crowded theater, which of course is exactly what Tim Walz wants. But of course, he missed the Supreme Court cases that have overturned and clarified that ruling, including 1969 with Brandenburg. And that is the one that is in operation currently. And here is the standard. And I want you to understand how difficult this standard is to trip. The First Amendment protects you with almost anything you can say. Hate speech, absolutely. Fire in a crowded theater, absolutely. Here is the actual quote. The First Amendment prohibits state regulation of advocacy unless that advocacy, quote, is directed to inciting or producing imminent lawless action. Not lawless action. It's not about, hey, I want you to do something illegal. It has to be imminent. So if you're saying, hey, in 6 months we should overthrow the government, that is protected speech by the standard. In addition, it also has to clear the hurdle of it is likely to incite or produce that action. So if you say something, we want to go overthrow the mayor's office tomorrow, it's imminent, it is a threat, but since only one person is around and they're just walking by you and ignoring you, it wouldn't be likely to produce that, so it would still be protected speech. That's why a lot of the stuff we saw in the college campus protests that was really, really awful wasn't First Amendment, didn't rise to the level of a First Amendment violation, because it didn't necessarily create imminent illegal activity, even though sometimes it did hit that standard. And also it had to be likely to produce that outcome. Those two things are incredibly high bars. Almost nothing clears those bars. So certainly saying mean things on the internet or saying I don't like your COVID policy does not rise to that level by any stretch of the imagination. And beyond the fact that he's wrong on this, I don't think he's lying about it. I really think he doesn't know. And that is worse. Is shocking that he actually doesn't know that. These are really basic things for anyone who would be at this level of government. It's unbelievable. All right, let me give you the another piece. This is Vance and Walz sparring on the issue of abortion.
Governor, I agree with you. Amber Thurman should still be alive, and there are a lot of people who should still be alive, and I certainly wish that she was. And maybe you're free to disagree with me on this and explain this to me, but as I read the Minnesota law that you signed into law, the statute that you signed into law, it says that a doctor who presides over an abortion where the baby survives, the doctor is under no obligation to provide life-saving care to a baby who survives a botched late-term abortion. That is, I think,
that's
whether you're
true.
Pro-choice or pro-abortion.
Not
abortion, that is fundamentally barbaric. And that's why I use that word, Nora, is because some of what we've seen, do you want want to force Catholic hospitals to perform abortions against their will because Kamala Harris has supported suing Catholic nuns to violate their freedom of conscience. We can be a big and diverse country where we respect people's freedom of conscience and make the country more pro-baby and pro-family. But please.
Yes, Governor, please respond.
Look, this is one where there's always something there. This is a very simple proposition.
Listen to this.
These are women's decisions to make about their health care decisions and the physicians who know best when they need to do this. Trying to distort the way the law is written to try and make a point, that's not it at all.
What was I wrong about, Governor? Please tell me, what was I wrong about?
That is not the way the law is written.
Yes,
it
is.
I've given this.
But how?
I've given this advice on a lot of things that getting involved, getting against, that's been misread, and it was fact-checked at the last debate.
No, it wasn't.
But the point on this is there's a continuation of these guys to try and tell women or to get involved. I use this line on this. Just mind your own business on this.
All right,
things
stop. I can't take the false libertarianism. I can't even. It's so horrible. But every single thing that J.D. Vance said in that section was absolutely true. Yes, they tried to sue Catholic nuns to force them to do abortions. The nine-month thing is well known. It has been reported everywhere. Okay, even left-wing outlets have reported this. Can you have abortions through 9 months? He says, I mean, if you listen to what he said, that's why I said, listen to this part. He says, mothers and physicians need to make that determination. Mothers and physicians, where's the law in that arrangement? Does the law prevent them from making the decision that ends the life? No. Mothers and physicians make it. The New York Times has outlined this. They have a long list of all the abortion restrictions in the United States. And they say that, Michigan's, it's viability. That's the line. You can't abort after they're viable. Nevada, 24 weeks, to use a couple of examples. Minnesota, no limit. That's the New York Times. Now, the New York Times tried in a fact check to pick apart the other part of that claim, which was the law. Now, let me give you the facts on the law. Tim Walz changed the law. The law used to say one thing, and he changed it to another. Why would you do this? Here, let me give you the details. Tim Walz's elevated profile as VP for Kamala Harris has led to wider awareness of his staunch support of abortion in his state, including a bill he signed into law last year that removed a requirement to try to save the life of a baby born alive after an attempted abortion. A Minnesota law that had been on the books since 1976 required responsible medical personnel to, quote, use all reasonable measures consistent with good medical practice to preserve the life and health of the born alive infant. Now, if that was the law on the books, and what J.D. Vance said was crazy, why would you change that law? Right? It just says, hey, you got to try, right? Try to save the life. Use everything you can to try to save that life. The legislation Walz signed in 2023 got rid of the word preserve and replaced the previous wording with a revised requirement to, quote, care for the infant who is born alive. Now, that doesn't mean you stab it, right? Like, that would be prevented. But what kind of care are you talking about? If you've ever had a relative who's at the end of their life, right, they have things called end-of-life care. And you might make the person comfortable as they die, right? But at some point, we all have to let go. At least that's what we all talk about. That's what they're saying with the babies. The baby's born alive after an abortion and like, well, you know what? We just have to let go. Let's make it comfortable. Let's not try to save the life. Let's just care for it. Pro-lifers say they find the change disturbing. The quote concern is that there's no longer requires the life-saving measures to be taken. It only requires care. So the law, as it's now written, could allow a baby to be left to die, even a baby who could be saved with appropriate life-saving measures. Paul Stark, communications director of the pro-life group Minnesota Citizens Concern for Life, told the Register. That's exactly why they did it, right? They wanted to say, okay, this baby was born alive. We meant to kill it in the womb, but it survived. So we don't have to try to save its life. We just have to kind of make it comfortable. That is what Tim Walz wants. That is letting a baby die after it is born alive. Well, that baby might have died anyway. Might have, but it's your job. I think any rational human being would say it's your job to do your best to keep that baby alive. What they say instead is we'll let it die. Maybe we'll make it comfortable. Maybe we'll give it some form of care, which is sort of unnamed. Before it was named, Save the Life, now it's just unnamed. The point here is it's quite clear what he did. And actually, if you go back and read the exact transcript of what J.D. Vance said in that question, he was very prepared for it because he said it exactly the right way. You know, remember Trump, I think, said, yeah, you're gonna kill a baby after it's born. They can deny that and have some credibility on that exact wording. Vance described the exact change in the law specifically. And once again, we're sitting here watching a moment where the governor of the state who signed two laws does not seem to know what he signed. Either that or he's lying. I don't know which one it is. Honestly, I don't know. He seems really stupid to me. And maybe he just doesn't know the basic facts about the thing he's talking about. Or on the other hand, he's blatantly lying to try to win an election on the back of dead babies. I don't know which one it is. I'm pretty sure that second one sounds worse. But either way, it's really, really bad. Speaking of really, really bad, Glenn Beck joins us next. You don't need me to tell you that life is precious, that it could be taken away in an instant. That's why I keep a 4-week emergency food kit from my Patriot Supply in my home. And you might be thinking, well, I'm not even, what's going to happen? Natural disaster. I'm not really in an area where that's going to affect me. I mean, I live all the way off the coast in, let's say, Asheville, North Carolina. These things hit areas where you can't predict them. There are people who are just struggling. And thank God there are charities like Mercury One, who's doing an incredible job in this region right now, trying to help out these people who are in these situations. But what you want to do with your family and your life is to do everything you can to protect yourself from having to need a charitable organization or, God forbid, the government to come and help. My Patriot Supply, they make this easy. They give you 2,000 calories a day. It's enough to go around during times of social unrest or government crackdowns or natural disaster or an attack on the homeland, God forbid. The food lasts up to 25 years. So you do this once and you're pretty much done. You don't have to think about it for another quarter century. Right now, you can save $50 off the same 4-week emergency food kit that I keep in my home. It's preparewithstew.com. Preparewithstew.com. You'll save $50 on your 4-week emergency food kit right now. My Patriot Supply will send it over as fast as is humanly possible. They're really fast. You can get your order within a day. They ship free and you can get your 4-week emergency kit right now. Preparewithstew.com. Preparewithstew.com. Check it out now. It's my Patriot Supply at preparewithstew.com.
Sehr gut, sehr gut, sehr gut.
Sehr gut?
Wieso Steuer ist sehr gut? Das sagen ganz viele.
Cool, wer sagt das?
Stiftung Warentest, Computerbild, Focus Money, Chip, Finanztipp, such dir was aus.
Mega, aber das ist doch bestimmt kompliziert.
Nö, einfach Foto von der Lohnsteuerbescheinigung machen und fertig.
Klingt sehr gut.
Ist sehr gut. Hol dir dein Geld zurück mit Wieso Steuer.
As if I don't spend enough time with him every day, we're joined by Glenn Beck. Here's a brand new special coming up tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern on Blaze TV. It's called The Moral Case for Mass Deportation. Be sure to stay tuned. Mr. Beck, welcome to the program.
I hate this more than he does.
That's not possible. No, thank you so much for joining us. We had a late night last night watching the VP debate.
It was a late night. It was romantic.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
it was.
Except Tim Walz just kept coming in. Hey, everybody, what you doing?
I like your impersonation even better than mine. It was an interesting night. I think. Let me get your generalized impressions to start off. Do you have like a letter grade for each candidate?
I don't know. Do you have a letter grade for each candidate?
I do have a letter grade for both.
Why don't you give me your letter grade?
Well, if I tell you, then it might manipulate your answer.
Oh.
Is that?
Maybe it would work the other way.
How about we'll just
this
say it at the exact same
time? This is a setup.
No, it's really not.
Okay.
All right. That's
dumb.
No, I'm only kidding.
See? I think for Tim Walz, I think he got a C.
Mm-hmm.
He passed.
Yep. Survived.
He survived. Mm-hmm. You could even maybe say a C plus or B minus if you're, on his side. But I think the honest grade is about a C.
Okay. I had C minus, by the way, for Walz. Yeah, so I'm right in the same.
He did enough to survive. He did enough to not hurt himself with the people who are voting for him.
That's the key, basically.
Yeah. But he didn't, I don't think he brought anybody else along. Okay?
Yep.
I don't know how many people can be brought along at this point. but
we'll very, see. Very few.
Yeah. So J.D. Vance, I would give him an A+, and and here's why. Incredibly disciplined. Mm-hmm. Every single answer started with, great, well, let me tell you first. And then he did all of the truth on what has really been going on. And then he said, but specifically, let me answer your question. So he answered every question. He has a pretty incredible memory. I didn't see him write any notes where Tim was always like, so it was weird. He made people who thought he was weird or crazy or, you know, somebody that's, you know, going to blow up the world feel comfortable that, no, he's not that guy, which does two things. It makes people say, oh, okay, well, maybe I can consider that ticket. Okay. Somebody who doesn't trust Trump, but knows that the policies that he's proposing are better. They know that what he did was better for them and the world than this is. But they just don't, they're not sure. I think he made those people go, it's okay. It's okay.
He absolutely cleared that barrier, especially for people. I mean, at this point, if you don't have an opinion on these guys, you're probably not paying that close of attention. So you don't really know what to expect.
Correct.
And except for maybe the stuff you've seen on TikTok or on Twitter. Yeah. And he cleared those bars, I think, by a mile.
Then he went a step further. He was inspirational, positive, as Selena Zito told us on the show today. She's known him and followed him for quite a while. And she said, that's who he is. Well, that's a Reagan quality. And no one possesses that quality right now. The closest we come is Donald Trump, but it comes with so much other stuff. Donald Trump believes in America, believes that we can be the greatest nation again. We can do all these things. But it comes kind of in a whole bunch of series of stuff where he was laser focused. We can be that nation again. Your children will have a better life than you did, but this has to stop and this has to return. Okay. Thought that was great. And, you know, I'm inclined to give him an A+ because, I mean, I've been watching these things forever. Mm-hmm. I cannot think of a vice presidential candidate ever in my lifetime that I went, holy cow, is he good? Have you seen that?
No, I mean, it was really, really solid.
I mean, Dick Cheney was solid, but it was Dick Cheney. Now, he was right, I think, for the time, for conservatives in our minds. But we now see, oh, you know, that policy, those policies were not good. Those weren't good.
Yeah, and in some ways, I don't even, when I watch these things and I grade them, I don't even think necessarily all that much about policy. Because I'm thinking of it as the person who's just jumping into this now. I know all their policies. Like, I'm not, there are several moments I will say I was uncomfortable with the policies that J.D. Vance was talking about. It, you know, like, example of this was the federal child care plan. Like, like let me raise my kids. Not, I don't want the federal government involved in that. I understand that that's a new sort of strain of what conservatism that's more popular.
What he was saying was, it doesn't work now because it doesn't allow the private sector, the person, to say, well, I want to do it my way with my friends in my neighborhood. I wanted my church to do it. He's like, we're cutting off all of those roads where those roads should be the ones that are really explored.
Yeah.
And I agree with that.
I thought his presentation was very good. The only thing I don't think we got out of J.D. Vance, which is, look, this is setting. You said A+, and the only reason I wouldn't say, I said A-. The only reason I would say A- was we didn't have that super memorable moment. There wasn't that moment everyone was talking about the next day. What I think people are talking about today is J.D. Vance is pretty good. Yeah. And that was actually a debate where they seemed respectful to each other, and I liked it.
That's what I asked last night during the coverage. I said, what was the moment?
Right.
And there wasn't the moment.
Yeah.
There wasn't in the last debate. That doesn't help. To break out, you have to have the moment. Yeah.
And that's why I wouldn't go A+.
Right. Well,
but I can understand.
I think the moment for me, and this is, again, it's It's not viral. There was no viral thing. However, we need less viral and more decency, common sense, just somebody who's like, it was so refreshing. And notice Tim Walz jumped on this bandwagon after JD started it. Mm-hmm. He was like, he was smart enough to say, oh, I better not try to piss him off all the time because he's playing a different game. He came in as a statesman from the get-go, and he walked over. You'll notice both the beginning and the end, JD walked to Walz. They were standing closer to his podium than to JD's podium. So he made the effort to be the peacemaker. Both times.
Yeah, he knew what the perception of was of him going in, and he knew to push back against it and prove it wrong. And I think he did that, which is much more difficult, I would say, than having a viral moment. A viral moment comes and goes.
Viral moment is what we always get from these things. What we haven't seen in almost 20 years is just decency.
Yeah, and I think that was notable. Although I think it at some point, some level, hit both candidates. I think they looked at the entire debate and said, actually, that was much better than the ones I've seen before, rather than just seeing J.D. Vance as above. I thought if there was one viral-ish moment, or the moment I'll remember from that, was probably Tim Walz's response to the Tiananmen Square thing.
That's my favorite.
It was, so, I mean, it is it so political malpractice to not be prepared for that question?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's no way. But if he really wasn't prepared for that question, that just shows how arrogant this administration is to think that that question would not be asked. Okay. They might have thought, well, I'm not going to ask it. You know, JD might bring it up, but you just blow it by that. Just stay focused on him. You know what I mean?
Right.
The one thing that the CBS anchors did was they did ask tough questions of both sides. Then they editorialized and blew all of their credibility, in my opinion, all their credibility. But they asked questions that would not have been asked of Kamala Harris.
I think that's true. Yeah. They followed up a couple times.
They did.
It was an interesting, going on the grading situation. I'd grade them a little bit higher than Walz because I thought they were not as good as the CNN moderators, but much better than that that second. What was the Kamala Trump debate?
ABC.
The ABC ones, where they were fact checking. They did do it a couple of times, wasn't egregious. It wasn't happening throughout the debate. There's one or two times they did it. It was annoying, but generally speaking, I thought they were okay. Was that your take on it?
I'd give them a D plus.
Okay, so you're a little bit lower. Yeah. I may be in the C range.
Yeah,
for them.
I think that they didn't. Well, C's just a stupid answer. You didn't put any thought into that. you'd really enjoy this joke. You'd really enjoy this joke.
Had to be there.
Yeah, I had to be there. I thought driving home last night, I thought 2028, one way or the other, the world's going to be massively different. And these debates should not be done in the traditional way anymore by these people. Shouldn't be. This should be the last time the, quote, mainstream media, or as I believe now, state-run media, should be allowed to do these debates. Maybe one of them gets something, but it should go to platforms like this or Daily Wire, or it should mix up. You should have that, and you should also have the other side. Because people are in much more of Joe Rogan land than they are in ABC News.
Has Trump done Joe Rogan? I was thinking about this the other day. He's done a lot of sister podcasts and related, like, people that I kind of associate loosely with that world. But if he hasn't done that one, I wonder why. Seems like it's a natural
thing. I wonder if Joe doesn't invite him.
I mean, he invited Bernie Sanders on and endorsed him. I mean, it's not like it would be. It's an interesting. That would be a good fit for him. Yeah. Last question for you. 2028. J.D. Vance helped himself.
Oh, my gosh. 2028. I mean, I said last night, Donald Trump, 2024. J.D. Vance, 2028.
Most likely, right?
Yeah. If Donald Trump was very bright at who he picked, and it goes against every narrative that you hear from the mainstream media. He's going to stay in office. He's never going to give it up. Okay? No. He clearly, intentionally picked a successor. And the other narrative is that Donald Trump doesn't like strong people around him, doesn't like people who disagree with him. Well, J.D. Vance disagrees with him. J.D. Vance will stand up to Donald Trump. And Donald Trump knows that. Mm. I mean, I think the pick of J.D. Vance was brilliant. And especially if Donald Trump can be elected and we don't burn the country down to the ground, his economic policies will work enough to where they can say with J.D. Vance, do you remember what it was like? And get J.D. Vance in. And if you can get 12 years, that's FDR. That's lasting change. We to fix this country, we need 12 solid back-to-back years.
Glenn Beck, new special coming up tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern. It is called The Moral Case for Mass Deportation. We didn't even get into it, but it's going to be a great show.
Great one.
Tonight, be sure to stay tuned. Glenn, thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Donald Trump will not be participating in a 60 Minutes interview. Harris will be. Usually they try to do both of the candidates. The Trump campaign is saying, we never agreed to this. We had initial talks and it just never really went anywhere. 60 Minutes is saying they pulled out. God only knows what's true, of course, in this case. I have my my beliefs. But I think Trump is just like, I'm not, why am I going to do that? You want to have someone who's going to go on these adversarial interview spots. Let J.D. Vance go do it. He's really, really good at them. Have Trump, I think, maybe focus on stuff like these longer form podcast interviews, which seem to be doing really well for him. I think after you saw last night in the debate, Vance is really good in these arenas and, let him go battle it out there. By the very slimmest of margins, CBS News flash poll performed in conjunction with YouGov showed that Vance won the debate by a slim margin, 42-41. What debate are you watching? 17% of respondents said the debate was a draw. This is a little quirk in polling. I've talked about it on the State of the Race podcast, which you can subscribe to wherever you get your podcasts. It is in the normal Stu Does America feed, so just search for that and you follow it and you'll get the State of the Race. And we usually dive into more nerdy stuff on that one as far as what's going on. One of the things we talked about on a previous episode was these post-debate flash polls. The bottom line that you need to understand is Democrats always win them. It's really legitimately incredible. They always win them. I don't know why that is. Even when Republicans win elections by large margins, the Democrats almost always win these debates. In fact, since 2000, there's only been two examples of Republicans winning these post-debate polls. You know what they are? Can you think off the top of your head? Well, I mean, I'm not including the Walls one, which was mixed. There was another poll that showed that Walls actually won the debate. So I'll throw that one out. The other two examples are, of course, Donald Trump slaughtering Joe Biden and his political legacy just a few months ago. That was number one. And then the previous one was 2012, the first debate between Romney and Obama, where Romney actually won that debate and then blew the election after that. Current state of the race right now, according to our PulseCast, the mainstream summary of all the data nerds and what they're thinking, prediction markets, polling averages, election models, has Donald Trump at 44.09% chance of victory. It's a little tick up from in the last few days, but no, of course, effect from the vice presidential debate just yet. We'll see if anything plays out there. One thing that will affect the polls is this port strike, if it continues to go on. I'm not playing games on port strike, says the union boss wearing lots of gold chains. This is a big deal because we're talking about major supply chain disruptions if this continues to go on. And right now, you're like, if you're Kamala Harris, you're like, Joe, just step in and end this thing. He can do that. He has the power to do it. He can end that strike. He's decided not to because why? He thinks of himself as the most pro-union president. U.S. port strike is backed by the White House. You got to think if you're Kamala Harris, if this thing gets out of control, the economy could tank and they could throw away the election in the next few weeks. And if this gets to 3 or 4 weeks of the strike, you're going to really start noticing this. So if you have something you normally buy in bulk anyway, you're running a little low, might be a good time to pick it up. Because if this happens to go long enough, it could really damage not only the economy, but also Kamala Harris's road to the White House. For a long time, I think we thought of real estate agents as just, I don't know, the person who happens to be involved in the transaction. It's the sort of like low-key passive relationship. You went with a cousin or a friend of a friend or somebody you saw on bench ads. Maybe someone you just kind of like searching for a house. I like that house. Oh, there's the agent's name below it. Well, that means they're representing the house from the seller's perspective. What if you're a buyer? You need an agent on your side. If you're looking for a seller, don't just take the first agent offered to you. Go to realestateagentsitrust.com. Find the best agent in your area. They'll pair you with the best agent, and they'll help you understand the crazy housing market and all the repairs you need to do and who you should work with and all the things that you need, whether you're buying or selling a home. If you're thinking about doing that, make sure to get in touch with Real Estate agentsitrust.com. You'll see what I mean. The name kind of says it all. It's realestateagentsitrust.com. It's a free service to you. realestateagentsitrust.com. Israel began its ground operations in Lebanon. They've confirmed their first fatality there amid intense fighting on the ground with Hezbollah. So that is going on. You've got all that going on. At the same time, you've got Iran firing missiles, not through a proxy like they normally do, but from their actual country. And what ABC News described as the largest ballistic missile salvo in military history, which is like, that's a shot. Wow, that's a high standard there in military history. Now, there weren't a lot of missiles back in like the Romans days, you know, so I can see that, but still, you'd think with all these wars. Now, ballistic kind of sounds like, okay, ballistic is this, gosh, that just sounds like, we were used to intercontinental ballistic missiles, and we think of, that just sounds scary. I mean, what ballistic basically means is it's you know, it's relying on the forces of nature, you know, gravity and such. So you're firing something up, and you're turning it off at the right time, and it's falling to the earth, as opposed to like a cruise missile, which is being controlled the entire time as it goes to its target. But still, pretty amazing thing to say, and that's a heck of a standard. Israel is now planning a massive Iran payback with the Middle East on edge. And this is an interesting, like, I think the Israelis know this is a key moment. They have to act now, particularly in the next few weeks, because really Kamala Harris and the Democrats can't abandon them with this election coming up. So they're acting, I think, with that in the back of their minds. But they're also like inviting willing to fight a three-front war, right? They've got the Hamas thing going on, they've got the Hezbollah thing going on, then they got the Iran thing going on. Now they're all kind of related, but still, it's a lot to take on. And the reason they're taking it on is because, I mean, inviting is probably the wrong word. They were attacked brutally over and over and over again, so they're responding to this, but it is going to certainly risk an escalation here, and it's something that they're actually prepared to go ahead with, it seems, this time. They're not, they're no more nice, no more Mr. Nice Guy. No more playing footsie with these people. You got to eliminate the terrorists, and they are taking that that entire burden on themselves, and it's a pretty amazing time. And I look forward to seeing how all of this plays out. Back in a second. I'm holding in my hand a beautiful magazine that you're going to love to just display in your house, but also, of course, read. You know, it's got articles from Glenn Beck, Mark Levin, Chris Rufo, Matt Taibbi. It's called Frontier. It is a beautiful, beautiful magazine. You'll love it. It's also part of your Blaze Unlimited subscription. Go to blazeunlimited.com/stew. Claim your spot. There's limited spots available. blazeunlimited.com/stew.